Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Financial Translator, where we discuss financial topics in layman's terms to move you from confusion to confidence on a given topic. I am your host, Kirk Krekemeyer, the principal advisor at Pebble Valley Wealth Management. We are a fee-only financial advisory firm helping our clients make informed decisions on their road toward financial security. You can find more information at pvwealthmgt.com. On today's show, I'm going to provide a market update with returns through September 30th. And since I'm recording this on October 7th, I'll provide a few comments with updated market information as well. I also provide a monthly market update on my blog each month, including graphs and tables that I'll reference today for you, for those who only just listen to the podcast. The general format that I cover for market updates will be the same, and that includes I'm going to give an update on the major asset classes and any noteworthy moves for the month. I'm going to update you on any treasury market and interest rate moves, comment on the active actions from the Federal Reserve. They're quite active these days. And then any special topics or comments. We've got a few of them again this month. As a brief legal disclaimer, my discussions here should not be construed as financial or investment advice, and each person's situation is unique. All right, let's go. So always starting out, the major asset class returns. It was a nasty month. You know, September was definitely another big down month. Looking at the table at the top of my blog post, equities, you know, U.S. equity, large and small, international, developed and emerging, they were all in that 9 to 10% down for the month alone. So that's going to bring year-to-date returns for those equity asset classes in that 25 to 27% range. Kind of a unique situation in that it's such a tight range. Usually you have some dispersion between the like large and small or emerging and developed. But again, very bad month for equities and year-to-dates, you know, that 25 to 27% range right now. The other thing that caught my attention on the table, the looking at the year-to-date, so at the table I show, you know, major asset classes, you know, the equities, bonds, alternatives like REITs and commodities. So I show the one-month return ending, you know, for September 30th here. Then I show the year-to-date return, and then just for context, I also show the 2021 return. Sometimes they come off of a very strong year. But if you take a glance at the year-to-date column, color-coded, so the red ones are the biggest ones down for the year. The biggest one, surprisingly, I mean, I talked about equities being down 27%. There are two other major asset classes that are down more than that. The biggest one, treasury bonds. Who would have thought that, you know, safe treasury bonds would be down? But so treasury, long-dated treasury bonds, and that's the key, is long-dated, long maturity. Those are down 31.5% through September 30th here. It's not a story about credit risk of the U.S. government. It is all about interest rate exposure. And as interest rates rise, bond prices fall. And the longer the maturity, the more they fall. So 30-year bonds are the biggest loser for the year at 31.5%. And the other thing, again, the worst performer for the month, REITs, commercial real estate. You know, think of office space, shopping malls, nursing homes, et cetera. Those were holding up actually fairly well, down for the year, but holding up fairly well, surprisingly to me, with interest rates on the move. But definitely September, they got clocked. And so they were down close to 12 to 13% for the month of September alone, bringing their year-to-date numbers into that, you know, 29 to 30% down range. And so the REITs definitely got smoked this past month for sure. And then the other thing, you know, you may have heard it on the news, or, you know, kind of the tailwinds underneath the markets this year. Definitely rising rates are the big story, and we'll talk about treasury rates in a second here. But the other thing is the U.S. dollar is strengthening. There's many, many drivers to the U.S. dollar. I won't get into all of them today, but one of the major ones I remember catching my attention with my CFA studies was the relative interest rates across different countries. And if a country has a higher interest rate, and again, all else equal, you know, safe economy, rule of law, et cetera, people are going to be investors are going to be attracted to that country with the higher interest rates, you know, again, after adjusting for currency moves. So right now, the U.S. short-term rates are relatively high relative to other countries, and our Federal Reserve, our central bank, is raising rates stronger and faster than a lot of the other countries. And so the dollar has been strengthening a lot this year. Looking at the table, I bring it up here because I've got two non-U.S. bonds I show on my table here. One is with a currency hedge, which I recommend for bonds because you're not really getting paid as much you know, with the volatility for currency with from bonds, a different story with equities. But anyway, so year to date, a currency hedged non-US bond down roughly 10%, whereas the non-currency hedged bond year to date down 24%. So, you know, we're talking about a 14% difference in returns simply because of that US dollar drag on international investments. I bring it up because US equity investments, it's the same story. You know, if you got money invested in the outside of the country, the returns you see on your statements, on your returns, on your performance is going to be relative to a US investor. And so there is an extra drag on international holdings because of the strong dollar right now. Let's see, the other comment, I also showed, in addition to that table, I've got a graph showing year-to-date returns for the major asset classes. So that way you can see, you know, the path that we got here. So taking a look at that, two things jump out at me. One, you know, up to now, we had the June lows. Mid-June is when we had our year-to-date lows, and then the market started to recover quite strongly, surprisingly to me, but kind of had a bounce through the middle of August, and then, you know, started pulling back again. After this rough month of September that we just had, we definitely not only tested those June lows, but we broke through them. So the graph you'll see visually, we are definitely now, at the end of September anyway, we were at the all-time lows for the year-to-date numbers. Had a nice bounce the last couple of days, or the first couple of days of October, but that actually got reversed the last couple of days here, especially today. Had a strong jobs report out this morning, which implies, the Federal Reserve is going to keep on going. I'll get more to that later. But we tested the lows, and we're kind of down to the lows of the year right now. The other thing, you don't see it on my blog post on the graph, but I always look at sector levels as well, sector holdings within the U.S. equity market. And to date, you know, the value was holding up much better than growth. So think of energy and utilities and staples holding up much better than the technology and, you know, the communication services, I guess, which includes Amazon in there now. But this past month, utilities got clocked pretty hard. So they normally would hold up fairly well. They were down about 10%, 10 to 11%, I think, for the month. So again, year to date, they're still fairly solid, but they finally gave it up again on the back of these higher rate moves. So jumping now to the next section, or the next major topic I cover, is going to be the Treasury market, you know, interest rate moves. Again, on my blog post, I've got a graph. I show the five-year history of different Treasury rates of different maturities. And so I've got the three-month T-bills, two-year, five-year, 10-year, 30-year. And then I also show the real yield of tips. And so you can see, you know, just over the past 5 years, again, after COVID hit in March of 2020, you know, interest rates fell a lot. You know, three-month T-bills were back down to zero again. Stayed there pretty much through 2022. But the start of 2022, again, the big story this year has been rising rates. They rose a lot. They kind of stabilized again after that low in June with the equity market. Rates actually fell again, stabilized a bit. They started to rise some in August, but definitely September saw a pretty substantial move again. So rates are on the move, pretty substantial moves in bond market lingo. Looking at the graph, again, a few observations that caught my attention. I've been saying this now for a few months in my podcast here, but three-month T-bills, so boring three-month T-bills, are now over 3.4%. So those are some pretty high interest rates. You know, again, active Fed, short-term paper, you know, interest rates are finally normalizing. It looks pretty interesting. Two-year rates and 10-year rates, and the 2 years rose about 65 basis points. That's 0.65%. And the 10-year rose over 0.5%. So definitely those are very large moves for a course of a month. The real yield, so tips, we won't get into all the details now. There's a lot of nuances to them, but just think of a regular bond pays you, a 3.7% coupon for a 10-year. That normal nominal bond, it's called, just you get a flat 3.7% coupon, and no matter what happens to inflation, that's what you get. As rates change, the value goes up and down. Well, with the tip, they break that 3.7 into two components. One is what they call the real yield that you'll get regardless, and then they have the additional, they adjust the par actually to give you a higher or lower returns relative to inflation. But the real yield was negative throughout the COVID issue or the COVID time period. Started the year, you know, down 1% on the 10-year, even 1.5% on the 5-year. That moved up a lot with rates throughout the year here. But again, month of September, actually it was late August and then September here, they just skyrocketed. In fact, the 5-year real yield was up over 1% at one point mid-month. And so huge moves there, definitely some value now being put into on the real yield side for tips. It'll be interesting to see, just as a quick side note, everyone heard about I-bonds these days, and the Treasury Direct gives you those high rates. They actually have a zero real yield back in May. The next announcement is going to come out on November the 1st. I'll be very curious to see if they give you a positive real yield for the next I-bond issuance. Given market rates, I certainly would expect them to, but we will see what they do. Back to the graph, two more observations. I mentioned the large rising in rates this past month in September. Definitely, there was a stretch like September 22nd through the 27th. It was just a very huge intraday moves. Actually, it was a result of some things going on globally, specifically in the UK markets, which I'm going to talk about later. Big reversal on the 28th, again, in the U.S. market because of the U.K., but again, some very volatile times right now. And then what's not shown in the graph, again, I'll talk about it a bit later as one of my issues, but mortgage rates. And so interest rates are rising, so are fixed rate mortgages. They have a weekly index, this Freddie Mac weekly index is now at 6.7%, but that actually is a bit of a lag. When you've got these moves, rate moves moving so quickly, there's a more timely rates come out of this Mortgage News Daily Index, and they're starting to see some new mortgages pricing up over 7%. So pretty shocking that you're going to see in those mortgage levels, which is going to slow some things down. One quick comment too, yield curve inversion. So sometimes, or people talk about, curve inverted, meaning short maturity bonds have a higher yield than longer term, longer maturity bonds. And people typically will look at the two-year versus the 10-year. And that has been inverted for a while. People historically will say that, or investors, conventional wisdom is that when the yield curve inverts, the recession is coming because Fed's going to raise short-term rates, push the economy into a recession, long-term rates sniff it out and start to lower. The one thing that the Federal Reserve actually looks at, and if you read their research papers, they often comment on it's the 3-month versus 10 years that they look at from if it's inverted and leading to a recession, historically speaking. That is not inverted yet. It definitely has gotten flattened quite a bit. So the 3-month has been ripping up higher, as I've always been mentioning. The 10-year has been going up, but not as fast. And so we're approaching an inverted 3-month to 10-year yield curve. But lately, this past month, the 10-year started kicking in gear and going higher again. So it actually steepened slightly, which is just kind of interesting. So I guess that's one thing I'd noted this month again was the 3-month to 10s, that potential inversion actually got a bit further away, which is interesting. Not sure what it means yet, but something to watch. Moving on to the Federal Reserve, that has been a very active entity this year. You may recall in March, so what is that, six and a half months ago, Fed funds was at 0 to 0.25, and the Federal Reserve was buying bonds on their balance sheet. Here we are 6.5 months later, Fed funds rate is at over or 3%. I guess now it's 3 to 3.25%, and they are not reinvesting, i.e. letting the bonds roll off to the tune of $95 billion a month on their balance sheet. So huge change in a matter of six months. There was a Fed meeting on September 21st. They raised rates 75 basis points as expected. Again, 0.75 equals 75 basis points. However, the big surprise was the projected Fed funds rate. How much more will the Fed go? And then once they do get to their endpoint, how long will they stay there? That is captured by something in what they call, the Fed calls the summary of, what is the term they give it? Summary of economic projections. I call it the dot plot. You may have heard of that. that's part of this projections they put out. So four times a year, they put out their projections of GDP growth, unemployment rate, and then PCE inflation, both the headline and core. And then finally, what they think the Fed funds rate will be, the collective, I think 17 members vote or put in their view of it. So the dot plot relates to those, what people think the Fed funds rate will be. So that came out, and the number jumped, again, for interest rate context here, jumped a lot. So at the June projection, the last June projection, they were expecting the Fed funds rate to get as high as 3.4 by the end of 22, 3.8 in 23, and back down to 3.4 in 24. That is now, at end of this year, up to 4.4%. And not only that, but at the end of 2023, the conventional wisdom, the Fed funds, the Fed governors and members voting on this think that at the end of 2023, it's still going to be up in that 4.6% range. So those participants who thought, hey, we're going to, you know, the Fed's going to pivot, they're going to turn around and start lowering rates quickly, that's not what the Federal Reserve is telling us through this summary of economic projections. So that was the big surprise. The 75 did not surprise the market, but how high and how long they're going to stay high on that terminal Fed funds rate was the big surprise. The other thing that caught my attention, it was funny in my sense it was funny, but so you may recall at the Jackson Hole Symposium end of August, Chairman Powell gave a speech. It was very short, very sweet, very direct, and very blunt, saying the Fed is going to keep raising rates until we break inflation. If it means we're going to cause a recession, if it means we're going to cause pain, we are going to keep raising rates until we get inflation down. And so it was, you know, viewed as a pretty strong speech. Well, here we were at the September 21st meeting, and I thought it was interesting. You know, they at the press conference, the first question that was asked of Powell, and I got the quote on my blog post, but I'll read it to you here. So his response to the first question, which was about, you know, some general question about rate moves and what are you watching here. So he goes, I'll answer your question directly, but I first want to start by saying that my main message has not changed at all since Jackson Hole. The FOMC is strongly resolved to bring inflation down to 2%, and we will keep at it until the job is done. So I thought that was a pretty telling start to the press conference, reiterating the strength of that Jackson Hole speech that, you know, don't fight the Fed. They're gonna keep raising rates until inflation turns, and they're going to make darn sure it has turned and stays down before they'll even think about slowing down and pivoting on their rate moves. Next meeting is November 2nd. Market's currently pricing in about a 65% chance of a 75 basis point move. That's as of October 5th, a couple days ago from the CME Fed Watch. I have not looked at it today, but the jobs report this morning was solid, you know, strong to solid, I'm going to say. And so I'm expecting that percentage to even be quite a bit higher now because the Fed, again, they're going to keep raising rates, and they've got room to raise them without hurting the economy too bad so far anyway. So that's a quick summary of and a quick reminder, the Federal Reserve is letting their balance sheet run off. So again, they're up to $95 billion with a B now. So it started in September. So this next month here, this will be our second month of $60 billion of treasuries and $35 billion of mortgage-backed securities rolling off the balance sheet, which causes rates on the margin to rise. And I'm not close enough to the bond market, treasury market trading, but reading stories and listening to analysts, they say that the liquidity is not as great anymore. You know, you don't have this big buyer, the Federal Reserve, doing all the buying right now. So things are getting a little tight in the bond market. A few topics to comment on this month. The first one, this one I was mentioning earlier about the large move in rates end of September. So the UK, so the United Kingdom, they have a new prime minister. They announced some fiscal measures that kind of surprised a lot of participants there, and interest rates started rising a lot. They were going to, you know, cut taxes and not have any way to pay for some of their measures. So interest rates were rising a lot. And then all of a sudden, there was a day, I think it was on a Tuesday, they rose about 50 basis points in one day, 0.50 in one day, which is absolutely huge. It caused some problems in what they call this liability-driven investing, LDI, you may have heard in the news. So basically what that meant was pension plans were using asset manager, but they'd be using, you know, buying long dated bonds, buying, you know, using interest rate swaps to hedge out their pension liability, which was fine as long as they put up enough collateral if the market moved. Well, when the market moves 50 basis points in a day on the bond side, they had to put up more collateral, which meant they had to sell bonds to put up collateral, which, you know, caused the bond prices to fall further, rates rising faster. So long story short, that was a really significant big move in the day. The Bank of England stepped in at the end of the day saying, hey, we're going to buy enough gilts to, we'll buy as much as we have to stabilize things. So that was a big relief. Then on Wednesday, the following day, you know, our market dropped, our interest rates dropped quite a bit that day in sympathy. But that was a big, you know, interesting thing to watch. I mean, when rates move this fast, this high, you know, something's likely going to break. And so that was, again, leverage is always the animal that takes it down. So there was a bit of leverage built into those systems. The other major comment, again, rates rising fast and high, and what's going to break? The housing market. If you look at the Case-Shiller price index, there's a lag to those. And so it's a couple months lagged because it reflects prices closing. But I've got a graph on my website, and it shows the monthly change, and it bounces around. It's going to be, you know, up or down, maybe flat, maybe up 0.5% or 1.5%. But the last, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, the last, I guess, 4 readings, so 5 dots, have all been moving down. And this past reading was actually, the price change was negative here. So it's probably going to take some time. But, you know, again, when you've got mortgage rates that were, call it 2.75 at the end of 2021, and they're now at close to 7%, you know, more than double, 9 months, 10 months later, you know, something's got to give. And that give is people aren't going to be as anxious to be buying the homes. And, you know, people that are going to be buying them are going to need a lower price to make the numbers work, just given these high mortgage rates. I already mentioned the Federal Reserve balance sheet. Oh, and then finally, October 13th is the Social Security inflation adustment. So it uses the 3 data points from the CPI. So October 13th is the CPI report, and that's going to be the last number we need to get that calculation. I'm estimating it's going to be about an 8.5% in the range. You know, it's going to depend upon this last month, but another big jump in Social Security inflation adjustments for 2023. We'll know the answer on October 13th. The CMS, I don't know what it stands for, the Medicare agency, did announce their Medicare premiums already for 2023, which surprised me. The other big surprise, though, is they're going down, believe it or not. So standard Medicare premiums were $170.10 per month per person for 2022, and they're going to go down, yes, down to $164.90 per month per person for 2023. A big driver, there was this Alzheimer's drug, a Aduhelm, if I'm pronouncing that right. But anyway, it was introduced in 2022. That was one of the reasons for the big jump in the premium. The CMS or the Medicare, I'm not sure which agency does it, but they are limiting the use of that drug. And so they're able to lower the prices, Medicare premium prices down because of the don't expect to have that expensive drug available through that program. Slight decrease in the Irma surcharges, those who are in the higher tax brackets. You're not going to see as much of a drop, but it's a little bit of a drop there. But the bigger thing with the Irma, it's an income level that if you go above that, you have to pay extra Medicare premiums. It's pretty nasty, pretty big move, and those who get hit by it don't like it for good reason. But one silver lining of this high inflation, many tax brackets and thresholds, not all of them, they're sneaky that way, but there's many tax brackets that are going to be bumping up with inflation rises. And so these Irma thresholds went up by 6.5%, or will go up by 6.5% for the 2023 triggers. And so for those of you who have felt it before, if you're single filer, it's 97K now. That's up from, I think it's 91. So going up from 91 up to 97,000. And if you're joint filer, 2022, your trigger amount was 182,000 of close to AGI. It's kind of a funky calc, but that's going to bump up to 194K. They do look back 2 years on the number, but anyway, thresholds are going up, so that's a good thing. So in summary, let's wrap this up here. In summary, the September returns were pretty nasty. Equity returns were down close to 10% for the month. Year-to-date returns, you know, 26, 27% down. So pretty nasty month. REITs got clocked even harder. They're down 29%, and 30-year Treasury bonds 31% for the year, down. So not good. Your rates continue to rise quite a bit. Again, after the jobs report this morning, this is again Friday, October 7th. Strong jobs report this morning. So expect the Fed will continue to keep going. No slowing there. They did go 75 the last meeting. Fully expect them to go again. The big surprise at the last meeting was that dot plot, what they expect the rate to be, quite a bit of a jump. And so we're looking at anywhere from 4.25% to 4.5% at the end of 2022 here. Then I just talked about the Medicare premiums and the Social Security release coming out, the COLA release coming out October 13th. So look out for that. And those cracks in the system. So the LDI, the liability-driven investing in England, a lot of leverage in the system, definitely caused some problems. And the housing market, just with these high mortgage rates on the margin, expect things to continue to slow there within the housing market. Okay, so that is the month of September, and that's a wrap on today's topic. Have a great October. It's a beautiful month. Take care. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Financial Translator. I hope this discussion helped clear up any confusion and will lead to more confident financial decisions. Thanks for your time, and be sure to check out all of our resources at pvwealthmgt.com. Until next time, go confidently.